You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 3rd of October. We've got US Jobs Data, 2:30 our time. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kieran Whitten. I want to chat PGMs. We talked with him back in July. He was bullish. How's the story now? And if we've got a moment, some gold. Ben Mayer from Prescient Fund Services. 25 years of ETFs in South Africa, but still, it's small. It's, what, 250 billion. There's probably a unit trust out there that's big. And then thoughts for me is Jerome Powell warns that stocks are fairly highly valued. Should we worry? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. We've had to develop an energy business, says Growthpoint. A crucial integration phase commences this month. Business Day, spring in new vehicle sales in September. Car sales, main winners, 38,603, up 28% on September last year, and more importantly, back above pre-pandemic levels. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up a little bit, 0.1%, NASDAQ almost 0.5% higher. The East is largely, it's mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo up 1.4%, Hong Kong down 0.9%, and Tencent just off 0.5% lower. Commodities all red, gold futures 3,879, Brent 6,439, platinum 1,583, palladium 1,260. The rand is 17.31. Bitcoin 120,400. And top 40 opening call, 30 points to the green. And what's that? 0.03% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the time as always. We chatted back in July. We were talking PGM stocks. Your comment at the time was that supply was tight in the PGM space. This was bullish for PGM prices, ultimately PGM miners at the same point. PGMs are down a little today, but they're well up on where they were back in July. They're well up on where they were at the beginning of the year. How's your the story playing out? Are you guys at Anchor still looking at PGM and thinking there's opportunity here?
Good morning, Simon. Good to be back on the show. I mean, I've seen that not only yourself, but just generally the financial media and our client base as well has just been asking questions about gold and PGMs. So I think I would also just urge people that to be careful of something called FOMO, which tends to happen when prices run very high. And that is when risk starts to creep in. But Simon, to your question, the story on PGMs remains very positive. And at Anchor, it's interesting because we actually have a quality growth bias, you could call it.
Yeah.
And in a local context, that does make setting portfolios slightly harder because we are looking for quality companies that are able to grow earnings consistently in our local environment. And PGMs don't typically fall under that category. You know, their earnings base is very cyclical, and we have found it very difficult to call these cycles to get in and out of the shares at the right time. And you know, I've learned in my time at Anchor that these macro cycles are very tough to call. But the PGM market, I think, like I said then, does tend to follow gold. And I think for many who missed out on the gold run, the run in platinum prices has really given them a second bite at the cherry. And there's been a sort of substitution effect that we've seen where the gold prices have run extremely high. And now we've seen jewelers, the industrial use cases, actually people starting to use platinum metals now instead of gold metals. And then also as in a store of wealth, we've seen a lot of research around how investors are starting to, you know, purchase platinum ETFs and also just an actual platinum. And then, of course, there's the EV story, which has not been as quick, the adoption, as people would have thought. And hybrid vehicles seem to be the new narrative. And those actually require more platinum metals in their catalytic converters. And then as well, Simon, there's a whole bunch of macro reasons around the gold price that I'm sure has been very well discussed. But we are currently actually overweight platinum still. But I think as ever close to the door with these sort of things, in our local equity fund, we had about 11%. And that is just above the index weight. So yeah, it is quite a weird time for us to be overweight platinum, but obviously things working out quite well this year so far.
And I take your point around quality. I mean, absolutely. And no disrespect to miners. It's the cyclicality. And as you say, it is immensely hard to call it. I mean, in hindsight, we sometimes look like geniuses. In hindsight, we sometimes look like fools. In the PGM space, is it still Volterra that's the preferred? That's the one that most people, when looking for quality in PGM like Volterra, do you concur with that statement?
Yes, Simon, exactly. Volterra is the one that we have the biggest position in. And it's quite interesting because what I thought was a throwaway comment from me about maybe it could follow in line with Thungela after being spun out of Anglo. And Simon, that's exactly what's happened. So it seems like getting spun out of Thungela might not be a bad sign of things to come for a company. So De Beers might be hoping for something similar in the future.
I take your point in that, absolutely. And it is. I mean, since being spun out, it's more than doubled.
Yes, exactly. So Volterra is the one we're playing. We also do hold Impala and Northam, both for specific reasons. We've always kind of liked Northam in the platinum space. Just we think they have an opportunity to grow volumes. And then Impala has said that they are more nimble to the general platinum environment and able to switch on supply. And lower costs, which is obviously something that is attractive to us. But I think, Simon, you know, even if we didn't have platinum in our portfolios, just from a South African point of view, it's very positive for our economy and our country, what's happening. And I think that should be enough of a reason to put a smile on a lot of people's faces, because the benefits of this will start to be felt into the economy in the next few months and years.
That's actually a great point, because I mean, part of it is just the rand, and yes, the rand, a lot of it is dollar weakness, but also it's that, you know, Volterra sells in dollars and then needs to turn that into ZAR. It's employment, it's balance of trade. We are still a mining economy, not as big as we once were, but we're still there as miners in a sense.
Yes, exactly. I've seen some charts recently about the contribution of mining to the GDP overall, and it is growing again. I don't think we're ever going to get back to the levels we were maybe half a century ago, 40 years ago, but it is growing and very positive for our economy. And South Africa's been top of the charts in the past few years, like with financial assets. So it really is looking good at the moment for South Africa, and obviously just hoping that the effects can be felt on the ground before too long.
Yeah, hopefully. And I mean, maybe it even flows us into some GDP, but we'll leave it there. That's Kerrin Whitten, Anchor Capital. Always appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm talking with Ben Mayer from Prescient Fund Services. Ben, appreciate the time. Your inaugural ETF Evolution report has just been published. It's timeliest because, of course, the first ETF in South Africa from Satrix is almost 25 years ago. And if my memory, and it might be, you were at the JC back then, and you were, if I recall, involved in the Satrix, because, of course, JC was a shareholder in Satrix in the early days.
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. That is absolutely correct. I was in the team with others that structured Satrix, and I represented the JSE in that joint venture. You know, way back in the day, it was Corp Capital Bank, JSE, and Gensec Bank. That was the first involved in Satrix. And it's clear to us that we're speaking to investment managers, you know, across various jurisdictions, you know, it's clear that the ETF market is growing. Yeah. It's growing phenomenally in Europe. We're seeing growth in South Africa, but it's fairly obvious that there's a lot of education that's still needed around ETFs and the opportunities that ETFs offer. And that is really why we produced that report, you know, because part of our business beliefs is to empower global investing success. The educational element is really tied to that belief. You know, that's what we want to do. That's the essence of that report. It's not specifically to promote product, but to educate the market on ETFs.
And it's a market that's grown. I mean, we're up to, 92 ETFs. I think we've got 29 actively managed. And of course, we've got AMCs and the like as well on the JSE. But it's still small. If I look at the size of the market in Europe, in the US, and then I look at South Africa, what's South Africa? Maybe 250 billion. If I compare that to the other collective investment schemes, unit trusts, it is still very small.
100% right, Simon. You know, typically in Europe, you would find that in the mutual fund space, you know, 50 to 60% representation in ETFs. You know, South Africa, you know, unit trust industry is around about 1.7 trillion rand. Mm-hmm. And in the ETPs is around about 250 million. If you include the AMCs, you strip the AMCs out, you sort of about 200 million in ETFs. And a large component, that's the gold ETF. So if you look at, and the commodity ones, right? So if you look at just the equity ETFs, local and foreign, you're around about 160 billion rand, you know. So, yeah, it's clear that there is lots of growth opportunities. And you've mentioned actively managed ETFs. I think it's fair to say that actively managed ETFs is going to be one of those triggers, you know, that's going to help the market to grow. Not because necessarily you're going to have more assets moving away from index tracking to actively managed ETFs, but it helps a lot in the awareness of ETFs. I mean, you recall way back 25 years ago, the whole industry, locally and abroad, the discussions was around indexation, so-called passive investing, you know, and the active investors is like the evil guys, you know. So it's almost like that sort of activist passive debate. But quite frankly, the last 25 years have shown that that is, it's a bit of a nonsense debate, in the sense that you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of different indices out there. And you've got ETFs tracking every little index, every little theme all over the world. So it's not really a passive versus active sort of debate. If you look at what happens in Europe, maybe less so in America, specifically in Europe, the advantages of ETFs as a wrapper, as opposed to investment strategy, is now the discussion points, you know? And it's not just active versus passive.
Yeah, it isn't. And I think active, and active is what, about 3 years? I think it was late 22 when they came out. And Coronation, for example, has got seven active ETFs. It's, to your point, it's less around the active versus passive debate. ETF is just a product. And the beauty of it is that exchange traded, which, you know, is distribution for the issuers in a sense.
100%. It's a completely different distribution model because it's exchange traded, you know, and that is really speaks to the way the world is moving. I mean, it's not often understood the benefits of exchange traded, now, apart from the fact you can trade intraday, but most people don't really trade intraday. Most people buy and hold. And that's sort of what a lot of investment advisors will tell you as well, you know. So the question then asks, now, what's the benefit of having it on the exchange? And the simple reason is that the moment you're in the public markets, your accessibility from various platforms is much simpler, you know. But this is what happens in the new world. You've got a lot of sort of platforms. You know, South Africa, you've got, for instance, the Easy Equities out there. You've got ETFSA that's got a platform. You've got players like Vault that's got platforms. Anybody with a cell phone can access investments these days. But you can only access those investments in public markets as opposed to private markets, because in the private markets, you have to be onboarded on a Lisp platform or a sort of like a proprietary platform. In the public markets, if you've got an app that can access those public markets, you know, and you have products on there, it creates a whole new world of distribution opportunity. And that is part of what we need to educate the market. And it's early days. And it's early days in Europe as well, from a platform access to public market listed instruments. But that is really the long-term distribution play of ETFs, as you say. It's not a product, say, it's just another wrapper for an investment strategy, different method of bringing it to the market.
I agree on that 100%. And the one thing that, ETFs have done, I think for the industry, 25 years ago, you know, your expenses on collective investment schemes, unit trusts were markedly higher. Yeah. They've come down to the point now where, you know, I mean, we've got ETFs at 10 points. I mean, you know, it's almost become that the fees have become almost irrelevant. Fees were never irrelevant, but it's fundamentally changed that aspect, not just in the ETF space, but in the unit trust and frankly, even to a degree in the hedge fund space.
I think you're right on that. And it's not only, look, I mean, index tracking fees are always going to be lower than actively yes. managed fees because less professionals that yeah. you have to pay. Okay, so that's the first point. But you're right that the fees in ETFs are generally lower mm-hmm. for the reason that it's public. Okay, it's more obvious what the fees are. And another big reason that's not that often that well understood in the markets is in the ETF world, you can't have different fee classes. So you only have one fee class. Now, it's quite typical in the unit trust space where you have an institutional fee class, mm-hmm. you have a retail fee class, and so forth. Now, the investment manager that wants to use the ETF wrapper to distribute their products got to think carefully at what price point are they going to price that thing? Because there's only one price you can price it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that is what you see as well. So generally, that's got an impact that fees tend to be lower than in the traditional unit trust space. But if you allow me, Simon, I just want to say another thing on fees. One should look at the total cost to the investor mm-hmm. as opposed to just the fee, you know, because fees are often misunderstood in the markets. But if you look at the total cost to investor, then you look at your access point. If you go access it via a platform, but the platform is quite expensive, you've got to add that to your cost as well, not yeah. only the product fee itself. You've got to look at on a trading perspective, you got to look at the spreads yeah, in the secondary yeah. market that the things trade at, you know. And then another thing is you also got to look at potential risk factors. In the ETF space, ETF as a wrapper often allows you to mitigate risk easier mm-hmm. than a product in the private markets because it trades intraday. And we saw it now, interesting, with the Trump tariffs in April, right? You had massive movements in the markets. You could very quickly get in and out of your ETF, whereas if you have a product like a unit trust in the private markets, you know, you send your instruction to this invest, it gets, you know, executed the next day, but by that time the price have moved, you know? Yeah. So that's that risk element as well. And you saw worldwide with, and not only Africa, but Africa as well, but more so worldwide, in April, a significant increase in ETF trading activity for that reason.
Yeah, it is that ease of trade. And I love the point around the total cost. That spread is so important because a unit trust trades at NAV. The ETF, there's a market maker either side of
That's
NAV.
That's right.
But we'll leave it there. That's Ben Mayer, Prescient Fund Services. Appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Late November is exactly 25 years of ETFs. Our question to you is, do you hold ETFs in your portfolio? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Thoughts on me when the Federal Reserve chairperson warns about expensive markets. Earlier this week, Jerome Powell said stocks are, and I quote, fairly highly valued. He's not wrong about that, but it's got a whole bunch of people a little bit spooked. But here's the fun fact in a sense. JP Morgan Chase has gone and done research on the S&P 500 return since 1996 after a valuation warning by a Fed chair. Average return post those 12 months, 13% up, to be clear. And this goes back to Greenspan, 1996, irrational exuberance. Ben Bernanke, 2013, when he talked around low interest rates and he said, pushing investors into riskier assets. Janet Yellen, 2014, referred to substantially stretched valuations. Jerome Powell again, towards the end of 2020, early 21, asset prices high by historic metrics. And every time, markets managed to go higher. But here is the other fun thing. So short answer is when the Fed Reserve warns that markets are expensive, the markets typically ignore it. But when they warn that markets are cheap, Well, then people get excited. Ben Bernanke, March 15, 2009, on a CBS 60 Minute interview, used those famous two words, green shoots, and that was the bottom of the financial crisis. That's it for today. We were chatting with Lon Robin Mwakabele yesterday from Perpetua. We're talking about the Capitec results. As he said, one of his colleagues had mentioned that they had run out of adjectives. We asked you if there was value here. Almost half said, yeah, but only if the growth continues. Almost a third said, absolutely there is. The rest said, no, far too expensive. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Gold stocks, is there still upside?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.